You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Oh, reliable Brough. He's always thinking about the Canucks. He always has takes on this sort of things. He always has opinions. While old Halford will just grow his hair long, wear hats, and not say anything controversial, and then he'll go home and have a nap. That's good old Mike Halford.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Wow.
Gonzaga has time to do something. Sox for the win.
You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Basically, the NHL is going under the assumption that everybody has. And whether they do or not, you basically, from an operational standpoint, everybody either has it or has been exposed to it.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
One thing I've been trying to figure out, when they could play, like how soon. It's probably not until like around a couple weeks today at the earliest, give or take a couple days.
Scott Drew's dream comes true. Coach Drew and Baylor complete college basketball's greatest rebound and rebuild with a championship.
If you lose that game, that is one of the great collapses in NHL history. That
no,
you would
settle down. Settle down.
It would have been if you had lost that.
It was the defending Stanley Cup champion. We're not talking about like the number one seed losing. Anyway.
So you're in denial. That's how you protected yourself mentally. Just saying that it wasn't a big deal.
You're ridiculous right now.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:02 on a Tuesday. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studio in beautiful Fairview Slopes, Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Nephew Dom, how are you now?
Rattled?
Yeah.
That was a scintillating start to the show.
Played the wrong intro.
It only took, what, 6 days, 7 days? And I've screwed up.
For those that missed it.
Oh, you screwed up lots before. Don't worry about it. That was just a major screw-up.
This was, yeah, this was like a big...
That kind of ruined the show.
Yeah.
Oh, it ruined it. Okay.
Yeah, it's over.
Like, employment-costing kind of mistake.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Oh, boy.
6:03 now, in case you missed it in the intro... Dom, who, by the way, when I first got in here this morning and talked to him, acknowledged that the struggle is real. The hours are officially getting to nephew Dom. Mm-hmm. Despite still being in his roaring 20s, how old do you feel this morning, Dom?
I felt 50 this morning.
Right. And so,
the first day.
So,
have you been eating well?
Yeah, actually.
Have you been getting good sleep?
I thought I was.
Okay, no more complaining then.
You responded to my shut it down. Shut it down. Yeah. You responded to my text at 10 o'clock last night, so you're definitely not getting enough sleep. Anyway,
yeah.
What Dom did for the intro was play yesterday's intro. Mm-hmm. Not Tuesday's intro, Monday's intro. Now, the problem with that is that Monday's intro included a lot of weekend-specific clips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we make it new every day. Well, I make it new every day. Yeah.
Including... a triumphant Gonzaga Bulldogs winning an epic Final Four game against UCLA. Not a very fitting intro for today, of course.
No.
Because today we are here to talk about how Gonzaga blew it. Blew it in the final against Baylor last night. We'll do that in 1 minute. Kirk, the unemployed cracker factory worker, texts in. Good start, Halford and Brough. Mm-hmm. Another unsigned text that must be from Gary. What a start. Kudos to you, Dominic. Kudos to you. What's coming up on the show today, you might be asking. And even if you're not, who cares? We're moving on. 6:30, Anthony Stewart, national NHL pundit for Sportsnet. We'll whip around the Scosh with Stewie. Some results last night, I never really know how to react to them anymore because you and I are both kind of the mindset that the playoff teams in the Scosh are set.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know what position they're going to finish in.
Yeah.
So while these games mean a significant amount to the teams involved, from a Vancouver perspective, just kind of collectively shrug. One thing that we are doing is taking great enjoyment in watching the Calgary Flames go down the toilet.
Oh, boy.
If there's any, we came up with two silver linings for this Canucks season.
Mm-hmm.
One is that Calgary stinks and is also going to make the playoffs.
Or miss the playoffs.
Miss the playoffs, sorry. And the other one is that, and we have to wait for this one and make sure it transpires. But Toronto falling short in the playoffs, preferably in the first round. I will
no,
take.
You're not even saying.
I will
right.
take
you're
a second
even,
round
you're
loss.
You're not saying it right. Not falling short.
Yeah.
Choking in the playoffs.
Right. I would take a second round loss even. But we're all gunning for a first round loss.
Yeah.
But will remains to be seen. On the subject of Calgary, we'll talk about that with Anthony Stewart at 6:30, 7 o'clock. Rick Ball, the play-by-play voice of the Flames, right here on Sportsnet. So we'll talk about what's gone on with this team. Mm. You know, I would love to get a deeper understanding of how they've managed to get not just worse, but very and collectively worse since the coaching change from Jeff Ward to Daryl Sutter.
Well, Kevin Bieksa was on the show yesterday and gave a bit of a told you so. He picked the Flames to finish last or second last?
I think 6th out of 7. He had Ottawa last and then Calgary.
And right now he's bang on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Kevin Bieksa might have picked that just because he didn't like the Flames, though.
Possibly.
In some ways.
Dating back to the Ferkland era.
Or he's just a better analyst than, 90% of Canada that probably had the Flames in there?
That's a good point, because he did also say when he saw everyone else picking the Flames to either finish first or second, he's like, I don't see it.
He didn't like the mix there.
Right.
He didn't think they had an identity, which probably is an issue with them, especially now with Daryl Sutter as coach. Is Daryl Sutter going to have Johnny Gaudreau try to play heavy hockey? It's almost like Torts and Line A in Columbus. You're kind of like, how is that going to work?
Square peg, round hole, all that stuff. And the other thing to consider about this team, when you go big picture, and we will do this with Rick Ball and Anthony Stewart at 6:30 and 7, respectively. You know, in the offseason, when they signed all these guys from Vancouver, it was all the, they ticked that box and they ticked that box. And then if you go back, Tanev's been a terrific signing for them. He's been really good individually.
Sure.
And Markstrom, I don't think anybody's pinning this on him, although Daryl Sutter's gone down that road a couple times.
His numbers aren't great.
His numbers aren't great. He started really well. Anyway, 6:30, Anthony Stewart, 7 o'clock, Rick Ball, 8 o'clock, the Drancer is going to join us. This will be a different kind of hit with the Drancer because, again, we are left without any on-ice news for the Vancouver Canucks. It's everything pertaining to COVID. Another player, Nils Höglander, added to the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list. We'll talk to Drancer about anything and everything that he knows about the situation as it currently stands.
I can't wait to ask him if he expects the Canucks to play any more games this season.
Right.
And what's the point of that?
Well, you know, another question we can ask him is our poll question today. It's up right now on @Sportsnet650. That's the Twitter sound. It's a loon, if I'm not mistaken.
Canadian loon.
The Sportsnet 650 Halford and Brough poll question, will the Canucks make a single trade before Monday's deadline? I've got numbers relatively refreshed. I've got 74 votes in, which isn't bad considering we've been on the air for 8 minutes. 75% say no. 24% say yes. I think we can ask that question of Drancer. Drancer's very good at breaking down the logistics of things, how it would work, because there are a lot of logistics now. We already was going to be in a COVID-19 world, but now that COVID-19 has hit the Canucks so hard, it'll be exceptionally difficult, I would imagine, and it's reflected in the poll question.
Just because someone has COVID, do you think they're automatically out from being traded?
No, I don't think
because
so.
Because it doesn't really make logically speaking, it wouldn't make sense.
Right.
You're going to recover. Let's say, for example, Brandon Sutter.
Correct.
Who would probably draw some interest.
Sure.
As a depth center, guy that can kill penalties, win faceoffs, veteran experience, et cetera, et cetera. He's on the COVID list, correct?
Right.
Okay. So, and apparently hasn't been feeling very well at all.
Right.
Now, would that automatically preclude another GM from acquiring Brandon Sutter? The playoffs start in May.
I know. That's why I think, like, I would be surprised if any general manager would treat it like you're taking, like, the monkey from Outbreak onto your team. Like, it's not like that.
Right.
You know, it's like you get sick, you recover, and then you go back about your life, hopefully.
But the weird thing would be, let's say Brandon Sutter gets traded, he's probably still got COVID at that point when he's traded, considering the trade deadline's on Monday.
Put it this way. If you were to make a trade, you would probably not expect to have that player for weeks.
Yes.
And maybe you're plugging him in 2 weeks, a week before the playoffs. So really, it's a depth trade.
So I think it would be less likely that a guy like Brandon Sutter gets traded because of COVID, but not impossible.
We do have some good audio on this. Elliot Friedman was on yesterday with Rintoul and Dodd. Not Sermon, but Dodd. We'll play that in what happened. But first, I think it's only fair and only right. This is a sports station. I know it's the home of the Canucks, but it's a sports station. We are going to start off what happened. One, right after Dom plays the music. But then two, with what happened in the NCAA title game last night. Dom, take it away.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
Well, it was a disappointing night, I think, for everyone that wasn't a Baylor fan. Let's be honest here. We expected more out of a national title game, not an 86-70 win by the Baylor Bears, in which they dominated from start to finish.
I think most people watching in BC were probably cheering for Gonzaga. Most. Not everyone.
Sure,
maybe there's a Baylor fan out there. Did you know that was their first men's title in basketball, but only their second men's title overall?
Yeah.
They had one in tennis in 2004.
Good research.
Never had one in football, never one in, in the big sports. That was it.
So for sake of pageantry and what have you, let's hear the final call yesterday from Baylor's first ever men's national NCAA basketball title.
Patterson will put the brakes on and dribble this one out. And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship and just the second men's basketball title in the history of the state of Texas.
Okay, so you know how there are some people that say, they're usually non-basketball fans, that will say it's not even worth it watching the first few minutes of a basketball game. No.
The first half of a basketball game.
That there's no point because the game's always just decided right at the end anyway. That game is proof that that theory is ridiculous because Baylor, right out of the gates, imposed their will, and Gonzaga never really made the proper adjustments to get back into the game. It just Baylor right off the hop. I think they're up 9-0.
9-0.
Controlling the boards.
9-0, 23-8, and 35-16. Game was over right there.
Yeah.
They punched him in the mouth.
They outshot Gonzaga, a 3-point line. Mm-hmm. Gonzaga was terrible from behind the arc. Nothing went right for Gonzaga. And the game, I thought in the second half things might be a little bit different. Baylor did get in a bit of foul trouble. Gonzaga had a bit of a surge to end the first half, but it never really happened. Gonzaga never was in danger of taking over that game.
Closest to got was 9 points in the second half.
Well, that's true though, right?
Yeah,
like they never. It was disappointing for me because I wanted to see Gonzaga win, but I think you have to credit Baylor fully.
Yeah.
And that's what Gonzaga head coach Mark Few said after the game. Dom, have we got that audio?
Literally busted us out of anything we could possibly do on offense. And we were kind of playing, with our back to the back, not facing up. And we couldn't get anything generated going to the basket. We were kind of playing sideways. And then at the other end, we had no answer as far as keeping some of their guards in front and made a couple of mistakes that we talked about not doing as far as giving them catch and shoot threes or shakedown threes, and they made us pay in a hurry.
One of the things we like to do here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650 is try and relate everything back to hockey. We know that we're not going to get into detailed breakdowns of the Baylor zone or how dominant they were on the offensive glass. Nobody wants to hear that. We want to make it relatable to the listeners who are slogging their way to work at 6:15 in the morning. You brought up a good comparison. Very similar vibes to what happened to the Canadian World Junior team back in January.
Did you actually, I thought, I was like, am I reaching here?
No.
That comparison?
I didn't think so. The Canadian team steamrolled through that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Gonzaga steamrolled through this tournament, aside from the game against UCLA. They steamrolled through the entire season. They were the team to beat in college basketball. Mm-hmm. And Baylor in the U.S., I think, was a good and apt comparison because I think everyone underestimated how good that American team was when they went in against the Canadians. And then we saw it right away. They're like, oh, these guys can go toe-to-toe with the Canadians.
Do you remember
no
the
problem.
First 10 minutes of that U.S.-Canada game, mm-hmm. it was like, well, the Americans came to play. They're not going to play.
Right.
They're not going to play just defensive hockey here. They're going to go in and try and impose their will on a Canadian team that's supposed to be better than them.
And the American team very much alluded to the fact that they got sick and tired of hearing how dominant the Canadian team mm-hmm. was. I think the same thing was there with Baylor, as I think Baylor had a huge chip to carry into that game.
Baylor, if you look at their record, they went
27-2, and their two losses were against top 15 schools.
In the Big 12. Yeah. So they played a bunch of good schools. Now, the criticism of Gonzaga most of the time is they get to the tournament and they haven't been tested enough.
Yep.
Now, Gonzaga did play some good schools early on in its schedule, but being in the conference that it is, maybe Gonzaga wasn't tested enough. I don't know if I buy that necessarily. I just think Baylor played really well.
Baylor was the better team on the night. You know, it's funny. When we talked about this last week, and we were talking about Gonzaga's undefeated run, I remember saying to you, the biggest fear when you do this is what happens when you come out and you either lay an egg or you don't play especially well. Because sometimes you can compensate for it. Like when they're playing in the West Coast Conference against St. Mary's, they can have an off night, mm-hmm. but they're probably just going to win. Because they're better.
Yeah.
They'll just do enough things and individual guys will make enough plays. What happens when you have that kind of mediocre performance and you're going up against someone where you just aren't going to win on talent? That's mm-hmm. exactly what happened last night. The story, it's funny because I almost feel bad for Baylor because, to be honest, if you're a neutral observer of this thing, the story isn't really that Baylor won the national title. The story is that Gonzaga lost it mm-hmm. because of what was going into the game.
Now, we're coming at from a slightly biased perspective, I think, just because...
But just go read the headlines.
No, but I think a lot of people, especially in BC, have followed Gonzaga because there have been some good Canadian players, those from BC too, that have mm-hmm. gone down and played for the school. It is close geographically to Canada, at least compared to Baylor, which is in Waco.
Mm-hmm.
So but you're probably right. I think most people were looking for that first undefeated season since 1976. And now Gonzaga has the comparison to Larry Bird's Indiana State, right. which went perfect until the final game, which they lost to Magic Johnson's Michigan yep. State.
Now, you don't have to answer this right now because I know it's a big, heavy thing. Is the commissioner of the SAD club, I did see numerous people on the Twitter asking, is there even a college division of the SAD club?
There could be, but Gonzaga isn't in it. How long have Gonzaga been around with legitimate title hopes?
They've been in the
20 years?
They've been in the tournament 22 straight years. They've lost two of the last four finals. So there's a decent case to be made. But
no, they haven't been around.
That's why I'm saying you don't need to answer it on the spot. We can let it percolate.
I thought about it yesterday. Yeah, I thought about it. And the only time they've been relevant as potential national title
is within the last
winners,
5 years, really.
And it's with Mark Few.
Yeah.
Right? You can't have one coach. So Mark Few's been there for 22 years or something along those lines.
Mark Few is Gonzaga at this point.
What do you mean you can't have one coach? It's college basketball. Isn't that kind of how it works, though, in college basketball?
I suppose.
The SAD club is
SAD club is supposed to be 40 years, though.
Yeah, minimum.
Right?
So, and I mean, technically Baylor could have been in it, to be honest. Well,
Baylor might have been in it.
They're out now. Yeah. But anyway, okay, that's enough college basketball for now. Let's get to the Vancouver Canucks. The latest COVID-19 update, the addition Monday of rookie Nils Höglander to the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list brings the number of players to 17. There's another unnamed player on the taxi squad that is quarantining as a high-risk close contact, so that's 18. Then there's three coaches, so a grand total of 21 individuals from the Vancouver Canucks currently in what is the biggest outbreak during the NHL's pandemic season. Let's play some audio from Friedge. We have the two clips here. One more about what it relates to our Subway Fresh Take, not our Subway Fresh Take poll question, just our poll question.
That's in the swear jar.
That's right. Dang it. Our poll question.
Although if Subway would like to get involved.
More than happy to have you. Mm-hmm. Love sandwiches. Let's hear Friedge now on all the things at play as it pertains to a potential Canucks trade within this COVID outbreak.
If you're a player that could be traded, or you're Alex Edler, you've got family in Vancouver, how comfortable are you going to feel about being dealt while that's going on in your province and your wife and children are home alone? Like, I got to think that's kind of a big deal. So that's number one. Number two, you know, you've got to find out anyone you've talked to, you know, how's their body feeling? You know, have they gone through it? What's the situation? So I think it's got a very big overarching factor on this. I think it's probably on a case-by-case basis, but I think that one of the things I was kind of told was, I think the decision isn't only about – decisions about the rest of this year for the Canucks aren't only about the players. It's about their family situations. Like, how do they feel? Like, has their family been affected or not? How do they feel about leaving their family or not? If you want to move with your family, how comfortable do you feel about doing that? I do think that's going to be a very big factor in all of this.
So our poll question today, will the Canucks make a single trade before Monday's deadline? I voted no. I suppose I could be wrong on that. But if I'm another GM and I'm trying to make my team into the best team possible heading into the playoffs, is there anyone on the Canucks you absolutely have to have?
Not absolutely have to have. Right now, Jordy Benn seems like the clear-cut leader for a guy that you can just flip. Because he's
not on the COVID list.
Right. He's the prototype. At this stage of the game, I know he's never really been one, but he's the prototypical rental defenseman right now. Teams are going to go into these playoffs and they're going to say, we have aspirations to go deep. We're looking at 2 months worth of play. We're looking at a bunch of games and possibly a condensed schedule if they want to get everything in time. We need more defensemen than we currently have.
And he can play the left and the right side.
He's versatile in that regard. He's had a pretty decent year.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening. So I know everyone's going to look at this and they're going to automatically think, like, big picture, of course this isn't going to work. There's too many different factors at play. But if you kind of break it down to each individual, it starts to make a little bit more sense. Now, with regards to when the Canucks will potentially be back in action, IMAC, Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet's very own, has a piece up on sportsnet.ca right now. Very good article, very detailed with all the questions and, you know, hypothetical, potential, possible answers to those questions. He pointed out that Irfan Ghaffar tweeted out that a lot of players have been told that they are going to self-isolate until Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously wipes out what was going to be an optimistic goal anyway of getting back on the ice by Thursday for that game against Calgary. So how is the NHL operating with regards to the Canucks and the potential schedule? Here's Friedge again on the NHL's view on things in Vancouver.
You know, like, basically the NHL is going under the assumption that everybody has it. And whether they do or not, you basically, from an operational standpoint, everybody either has it or has been exposed to it, and you have to treat the organization as such.
So I don't know when we're going to see the Vancouver Canucks in action again. I don't know if we will for this season. If I were to make a bet, I think the Canucks will play hockey again this season.
I think they'll play, but I don't think they're going to get to 56 games. That would be my – what day is it? Tuesday? So that would be my Tuesday proclamation right now. And I reserve the right to change it tomorrow because it's COVID. We're allowed to do these sorts of things.
Anthony Stewart is going to join us next. We'll talk about Montreal getting another win last night. Pretty much the Flames and the Canucks, and obviously the Sens, are pretty much buried. We talked a lot about the Canucks in the last little while, and we'll continue to talk about the Canucks. We'll talk to Anthony Stewart about potential deadline moves for the Canucks, if they're possible. But I think we should also delve into the Flames.
Yeah.
First of all, because it's fun, because the Flames are losing. They're also losing with some guys that played pretty big roles for the Canucks last season. Chris Tanev, Jacob Markstrom. And now you're in a situation probably heading into the offseason when you're going, does this team need to be blown up or does it at least need major surgery? And where does that leave a guy like Chris Tanev, who's like, oh, I signed over here for
Jacob Markstrom. Signed long-term over here. What's going on with this team?
Yeah.
Remains to be seen. So Anthony Stewart's coming up next. Before we go to break, real quick, we got some exciting news here, Jason. Helford & Bruff in the Morning is now brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, let Able Auctions help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it all and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. It's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650.
Riley near circle to Marner with a shot, tipped by Hyman, stopped by Markstrom, it's loose, they score! Austin Matthews picks up a loose puck in front and fires it by Jacob Markstrom. Their first power play goal on 29 opportunities in the last 12 games, and they've regained the lead. It is 4-3.
And it ended up 5-3 for the Leafs over the Flames. You're listening to Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650. Flames lost their fourth straight last night, 5-3 to Toronto, as mentioned. Calgary now has lost 8 of their last 9. They're now 2-9 in their last 11. Whatever they thought they were going to get with the coaching change to Daryl Sutter has not turned out. It has been worse, and now significantly so, than whatever they were doing under Jeff Ward. It is a disaster in Calgary.
If you look at some of the playoff projections from sites like The Athletic or Money Puck, the playoff race is over. Calgary's not making the playoffs, and neither is Vancouver, and obviously Ottawa isn't. And Calgary now has to start thinking about the trade deadline, who might go, and they also have to start thinking about this offseason and going, which direction are we going to go here?
If you had told me at the beginning of the season that sellers at the deadline might be Calgary and St. Louis, I'd be like, what are you talking about? There's no chance. But we could be on the precipice of that because we'll get to the Blues later on. They've been a nightmare as well. But before we do any of that, we got to go to the phone lines now from Fan 590 and Sportsnet's national NHL coverage. Happy to have on the program Anthony Stewart here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. You know, we're trying to make ourselves feel better here in Vancouver because the team is going through a rough stretch right now. The season hasn't lived up to par. There's not going to be any playoffs here. So we're trying to see what we can take solace from in other teams' struggles. And who better than the Calgary Flames, who raided the Canucks cupboard.
We hate the Flames here.
That's right. So, they raided the Canucks cupboard in the offseason. And now they are as bad, if not worse, and maybe the most disappointing team in the entire North Division this season. Now, we had Kevin Bieksa on yesterday to try and diagnose what's gone on with Calgary. We wanted to get your thoughts about this Flames team and why have they fallen so short of expectations this season.
Well, I think backtracking sort of gambled on bringing in Daryl Sutter, thinking that he was going to sort of bring in a jolt to this team. But these problems, I think, with this organization sort of runs a little bit deeper than than a quick fix, right? There's just some players that are just sort of underachieving now, going on longer than 18 months. And, you know, say what you want about a Johnny Gaudreau or a Sean Monahan. These guys are top players in the National Hockey League, and they just don't seem to be buying into either system. So I think they have to look at moving one or two of those guys in the offseason. That's the reality of the situation. They're talented players, but Calgary, you know, in signing Tanev and Markstrom, you know, they did that with the expectations that they were going to be challenging in the Scotia North Division. So when you're underachieving and you go through six coaches through, you know, over a certain period of time, you have to make changes. And again, they fired a couple of coaches now. So I think the next chip to fall is going to be some player movement. So right now with this system, Johnny Gaudreau is not going to chip and chase. He's not going to be crashing the net trying to get second and third opportunities. Sean Monahan's not the same way. So I think in the past they sort of waited around for the power play to sort of come and click and save them in some of these games. But the one thing in the couple games against Toronto, those are winnable games. They just didn't have any juice or any energy or any will to take over those games. So I think in years past they were relying a little bit on goaltending as well. But it's just a far fall from where they were a couple of years ago when they were the leaders of the Western Conference.
It's a really tough situation to be in if you're general manager Brad Treliving, because it's easy to trade Johnny Gaudreau, but what kind of return are you going to be looking for then? Because if you you can criticize for Johnny Gaudreau, or you can say that he doesn't fit Daryl Sutter's style or whatever, but he still gets a bunch of points for the Calgary Flames. And if you take him out of the lineup and you replace him with, I don't know, like a draft pick or some prospect, then you've made your team worse, have you not?
Yeah, well, Brian Burke had the best analogy. He's like, you got to get good real quick or get real bad real quick too. And I think they're fifth last right now in the National Hockey League, and I think they can benefit from getting a couple top players and prospects in the draft and hit a bit of a reset here. But with Goudreau, like, this guy is a 100-point guy, and that was a couple seasons ago. So it just seems that it's just not working for him in Calgary. But for me, it's not the points. What are you doing when you're not putting up the points? And the compete is just not there. And again, I'm not sure if Calgary fans are listening. I hope not. But I think I heard Matthew Tkachuk's name maybe three times during the whole entire broadcast. So it's just that they're waiting for something to happen, waiting for someone to come in and save the day, but it's not happening. So you could chalk it up to a pandemic, and it's a pandemic hockey, but expectations were really, really high in Calgary. That's why they went out and spent the money in the offseason, and it's just not working there right now.
Was it the wrong decision to bring back Daryl Sutter?
I think it was the nuclear option, right? And when you're a little bit desperate and you need something, that was a nuclear option. But Sutter, he demands accountability. So again, I don't know what's going on in that dressing room. Maybe guys weren't being accountable. Guys weren't showing up, pulling up their bootstraps, and he'd be that perfect coach for that type of style. But in the National Hockey League now, it's not about the carrot and the stick. You have to find a way to individually get through to each player and find a way to get the best out of their games. And you're seeing it with some other teams. Guys are getting healthy scratched, and you know, when top guys get healthy scratched or guys are messed with their ice time, it's a big problem amongst the players. It's amongst the players. I've had captains come to me every day in my stall and talk to me about what's going on with the coach, and I'm like, well, I'm a rookie. I'm sure you're asking you what's going on with the coach. So it sort of spreads like wildfire when the coach is not really connecting with the players. And we'll see what's going on. So far, it's not working at Calgary.
Is it harder for a coach like Daryl Sutter to come into a veteran team than it would be if the Flames were young and the players were, they didn't have there's some players on Calgary that have had pretty good success in the NHL. And I mean, we've seen the nuclear option here in Vancouver with John Tortorella, and that was a disaster, I think, in some parts because Torts came into a team that had had quite a lot of success, and he was sitting there going, you guys don't really know how to win. And a lot of the players on the Canucks were like, well, what do you mean? We won two President's Trophies, nearly got to this. Now, the Flames aren't in that same position, but I sometimes do wonder if those coaches aren't better with a younger, more impressionable team.
Yeah, you think about it, but there are actually pretty abundance of coaches out there too, but you got to find the one that complements the group the most, I think. And I think Treliving thought that was the case with Sutter because he had some success with the Flames in the past. But the thing is, when you have a veteran group and a veteran team, there's pretty set in their ways. The culture is already set. And when that culture is set, it's really, really tough to change that. And, I've had coaches in the past come and yell and scream. And after about 3 weeks, we're just like, okay, like you're kicking over the Gatorade can for the fifth time this month. It just doesn't work. You have to find a way to connect. And I had a coach in Atlanta with Craig Ramsey, and just the way that he connected on an individual level with every single player. I went from 7 points 1 year to 40, and it was just him believing in me and teaching the game. So I think now, you got to have that accountability. It is a National Hockey League. It is results-based, but you can't just be – you got to find a way to get the most out of each player.
Well, your last year in Carolina, you went – you had the midseason coaching change, right? That's when they went from Maurice to Muller, if I'm not mistaken. In your experience, does a coach consciously have to come in and do stuff different just to make sure that it's not the same thing as the old guy?
Yeah, and that's sort of the same thing with GMs as well. They want to come in and make a bunch of deals just to make it look like they're doing something.
Right.
Yeah, but Kirk Muller was his first head coaching job too, so he wanted to put his his personal touch on things. And I remember, I think our power play was struggling, and he came in because he was a power play guy in Montreal, and the power play actually changed up and actually was pretty successful for a couple of months too. So, but the thing is with Sutter, I think the one thing about him, he gets the most out of this group. I know it's tough to say right now, but there's no gray area. And I think that's the one thing a lot of players sort of complain about. They don't really know where they stand with the coach. They don't really know their role. So with him, it's black or white. You're either going or you're not. And you've seen it with some guys, top guys, ice time getting cut. But I think some guys, 3 minutes, some guys have been in and out of the lineup. And, you know, he's not afraid to have a hot mic and say, hey, guys, this guy's not good.
Anthony, trade deadline is Monday. We're wondering in Vancouver if the Canucks are going to be able to make a single trade given their COVID situation. What are you expecting from trade deadline
across Canada, there are going to be some buyers. I mean, the four playoff teams are pretty much set in Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Montreal. It would take some sort of miracle for Vancouver or Calgary or Ottawa. I think Ottawa might already be eliminated. But those four teams, Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Montreal, how aggressive are these guys going to be at a trade deadline?
Well, I think one of the most aggressive, just based on the comments, is this Bergevin, because he's saying nothing. We're not making any deals, and it seems every week he seems to have something in the pot there, too. And Brendan Gallagher went down last night with the broken thumb, so he's out for a couple weeks, too. So I could see them adding a couple players. Winnipeg Jets, if they add a defenseman or two, a top 4D and another depth defenseman, you got to watch out for them, because their top six is as good as any teams in the National Hockey League. So the intriguing thing is now with Toronto, are they going to go and get a goalie? Because Jack Campbell's been in and out of the lineup. He's been hurt. Freddie Anderson is still out. Are they going to go get a top six winger to play with JT and Nylander, just based on the fact that Galchenyuk's been playing pretty well as of late? Are they going to get some depth? So I think now, especially with the quarantine period only going to 7 days, I think teams are going to be a lot more active as before when it was going to be 14 days. So it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a long day for me. I'm going to be there from 7 a.m. to about 4 p.m. So I'm going to make sure I have my Red Bull ready to go.
And we're speaking with Anthony Stewart on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. This goaltending situation in Toronto, don't they have to go with Jack Campbell right now, the way he's been playing?
I'm stealing this quote. I think it was from Shakespeare, but the best ability is availability. And, you know, he's been great when he's been in the lineup. But I think after every start, he's actually taken a couple days off, too. So if I'm Toronto, I'm worried about that, because if you lose a key player, especially in the goaltending position, that can cripple your playoff chances. We saw it last year with Jake Muzzin getting hurt in the Columbus series. And, you know, that pretty much kiboshed their chances in getting past that round, too. So I think they should add maybe an insurance guy, a number three that can come in and really, really play. I know Michael Hutchinson's been doing, you know, a half-decent job there as well. But if the goaltending position's weak, you know, they can go from playoff contenders to pretenders literally in one series. So I think that's a big question Dubas has to answer right now. Are they going to risk going into potentially a four playoff series with, you know, a goalie that's, you know, 60-70% and another goalie that's 50%. I think that's too big of a risk.
What has happened to Frederik Andersen that his numbers are .897 save percentage?
The media. It's always the media's fault.
Sorry about that, Frederik. Our bad.
I am the media now. No, but it's a tough, tough market. And I think that's why he was one of the best goalies in the National Hockey League to be able to play in this market, because every single game, the microscope shifts, and it's always shifting past this goaltending position by a game-by-game basis. So I think there was a lot of pressure on him coming into a contract year and knowing that he hasn't had that playoff success in Toronto. And the microscope was really, you know, focusing on him to take the team to the next level. So now you couple that with a couple injuries and you really want to play, and then you push the limit and then now you can't go anymore. That spells recipe for disaster. So, but I think he's a quality NHL goaltender. I think if he's 100%, I think he has to be the guy in Toronto, because again, I think with him playing for a contract, I think he could really put this team on the back. And again, I like Jack Campbell. He's playing amazing hockey, but does he have the pedigree now to really take Toronto through 2, 3, 4 rounds? Because that's the expectations right now based on how the season's going.
Well, we hope he doesn't, because we've got two things that we're looking forward to in Vancouver, at least this show. Flames to miss the playoffs, and that's looking like a check. And then Toronto to choke in the first round of the playoffs. So,
well, you better hope that doesn't happen, because if Toronto wins, I saw pre-plans of the parade. I think it goes right by the Roxy, too. That's how long it's going
to be. I know. It's been a hard year already. We don't need a deep Leafs playoff run to add to our misery here in Vancouver. Anthony, thanks for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Anthony Stewart from the Fan 590 and Sportsnet's national NHL coverage. We talk trade deadline there. Of course, all trade deadline coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online, and it's Sherritt.com. Okay, here's what's going to happen for the next little bit. We're going to come back. We'll delve deeper into some of these NHL stories. We alluded to the St. Louis Blues, losers of 7 straight. 7. The Stanley Cup champions from 2 years ago might not make the playoffs this year, and it might end up being San Jose or Arizona that jumps up.
San Jose, unless you haven't been paying attention,
they're on fire.
Right?
Dylan Gambrell.
Well.
The Dylan Gambrell-led Sharks. I have no idea what's going on down there, but we're trying to pay attention. There's a bunch of other stories from around the Scotia and around the NHL as well. We'll get into those. 7 o'clock, we're going to get back into piling on the Calgary Flames. What a bunch of losers. Just losers. We're going to talk to Rick Ball. He's not a loser. Play-by-play man for Sportsnet, for the Flames. We'll ask about this team, and we've got to ask, well, what comes next? Is it going to be a big deal at the deadline? Is it going to be a big shuffle in the offseason? Is Brad Treliving's job safe? Is Daryl Sutter there for the long haul? So many questions about this team that took away Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom in the summer and are now floundering in a major way. That's all coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650. Here we go, yo. 6:50 on a Tuesday. Halford, Brough, Tribe Called Quest, Nephew Dom, we're all here. Did you know this is the song that made Busta Rhymes famous?
I did not.
He's got a verse at the end where he does like the very now famous Busta Rhymes, like the really energetic, crazy, high-pitched flow. No one had ever heard it before. This is it. This is a good song.
File that under things that don't matter.
Ouch.
Wow, Dom.
Dom's salty this morning.
I know the early mornings are getting
salty,
to you, but
salty. He's like Daryl Sutter.
Does anyone like Busta Rhymes?
He was quite popular at a time.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I believe he sold many albums, indicating a level of popularity.
Yeah, so did Nickelback.
That is an assault, an affront.
That is the first time ever that Busta Rhymes has been compared to Nickelback.
Right.
Aptly, may I add.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're staunchly opposed to.
I just think he's not that great to listen to.
Well, you're not very good to listen to either this morning, especially when you're in such a bad mood. I'll be honest with you.
I'll shut up then.
You're very cranky.
You know, there's only room for one cranky person in the mornings.
Everyone needs to know their roles, okay? Look.
And that's me.
Yeah. We can't have two cranky guys. It throws off the chemistry.
Busta Rhymes is great.
Now it just feels insincere. We are in the market for an insincere guy. So you're actually fitting the bill there.
I'm going to throw this out to the listeners right now. Are the Calgary Flames struggles making you feel a little bit better? Does it?
It's a good question.
Does it make, when you see the Flames lose again as they did last night, even though the Leafs won because of that, does it make you feel a little bit better? I mean, I consider the Flames the Canucks' biggest rival from a historical standpoint.
Yep.
That might just be because I'm a little bit older and I remember some of the series they played. I know they played in 2015 and it didn't go the Canucks' way.
An unforgettable series.
Mm-hmm. But I have always just considered them the team that if you ask me, you know, who do you hate in the NHL? I'd be like, I don't like the Flames. Recently, there have been different teams, but does it make you feel better that this Calgary team that gave Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom contracts, big contracts, that I don't think anyone in Vancouver was clamoring the Canucks to sign? I don't think people were like, oh, some people might have been, but I don't think the majority of people were like, oh, they should have just bit the bullet and given Markstrom 6x6. They should have bitten the bullet and given Chris Tanev term. The one that got away that I think caused the most angst was Tyler Toffoli. But anyway, because that was such an affordable contract.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the Flames, this was supposed to be their year where, all right, we've solidified the goaltending position.
Mm-hmm.
We've brought in a defenseman in Chris Tanev to replace TJ Brody.
Yep.
It's hard to find a glaring weakness on this roster. You look at some of the forwards and you're like, yeah, there's some good forwards. You look at the defense, yeah, there's some good defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the goaltending. Well, and it just has not worked to the point where the Canucks, actually, by being on a COVID break, are gaining ground on the Calgary Flames because the Flames keep losing. The Flames are below the Canucks right now in terms of points percentage.
Their magic number is now 12.5. They're on the verge of elimination now. It's funny. You know, you could actually, in a very like self-deprecating way, spin this as Calgary thought they had all the answers mm-hmm. in free agency, but the problem was all their answers came from the Vancouver Canucks. Now, it's funny because that's a very disingenuous thing to say because I think Tanev's been maybe their most consistent player this year. Mm-hmm. He's in the running. If you follow the team, even at a distance, you hear the national guys. I know Kelly Rudy mentions him all the time about how impressed he's been watching him night after night. Now, the Markstrom thing, we've talked at length with Kevin Woodley, who always does a fantastic breakdown and analysis of goaltending, that, you know, it's year one, and there's the transition to what kind of chances you're facing in front of a different system. I don't know where Flames fans are on Markstrom right now. I know some of them are saying we need more of these big saves that they saw so often for Vancouver last year, bailing the team out, keeping the team in games like that one yesterday, where, I mean, Anthony Stewart just came on with us and said that was a winnable game for the Flames. It was a 5-3 game where Toronto wasn't outstanding. The game was probably up for grabs if there was a little bit of jam, but they didn't get it done and they didn't get the saves.
Sterling on Twitter, you're right, Calgary is the team I love to see lose the most. Definitely the Canucks' biggest rival. Ed the Canucklehead, I usually don't find pleasure in other people's pain, but yes, I love that the Flames suck. Two-time caller Brian, yes, the Flames make me feel better. Like how watching someone you dislike drop their coffee. Nothing's sure. better for me, but it's worse for them. Yeah, I think most people are on board with this. Now, what are the chances of the Leafs choking in the first round? I think if they go up against Montreal, they're going to have a hell of a series from them.
Yeah, I think it'll be, I mean, it's fantastic. That matchup right now, mm-hmm. you know that everyone involved in television and radio, especially on our side of things here now, is drooling at the prospect and just begging that that thing goes seven games because that's going to be a terrific series, especially if Marc Bergevin goes out and maybe makes another move because Gallagher's going to be out for a mm-hmm. while now. We don't have enough time.
Is Gallagher going to be back for the playoffs?
Looks like about a month yeah. with a broken thumb. I mean, he's broken his hand like 27 times already. Like
probably lots of calls to get Cole Caulfield in the lineup too.
And it's, I mean, and they do have a glut of forwards already, yep. right? So they've got fixes there, but you know, this is a team that's in go for it mode. And Eric Staal was one of those pieces, scored the overtime winner last night. We'll get to all that later on, probably after our next guest, Rick Ball, coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We'll get into everything about these disappointing Calgary Flames. As mentioned, it's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650.